This weekend will mark the 60th anniversary of the first atomic bomb the United States dropped on Japan, on the city of Hiroshima, in the year 1945, and helped to bring around the end of World War II. But what Americans didn't know in the years following World War II was exactly how much devastation that atomic bomb caused, nor the one dropped just a few days later on Nagasaki, Japan. Why didn't Americans know about that? Because there was suppression of a lot of film that was shot in those two Japanese cities after the bombings. Why was that film suppressed? Greg Mitchell has written a special report for editor and publisher. 10 years ago, he wrote a book called Hiroshima in America, and he's also contributed to a documentary that's going to air on the Sundance Channel on Saturday night called Original Child Bomb. And so I thought I'd invite him on the show here today to talk about what he has discovered, or rather I should say uncovered. Greg, welcome to KMOX.
Hi, nice to be here.
So why was this footage suppressed?
Well, it happened right after the bombing, and the first American military crews went in to shoot footage to document what happened there. Also, Japanese newsreel teams went in and shot footage. And what happened was first the Americans seized all the Japanese footage and then continued to shoot their film, which was then declared top secret and basically put away for almost 40 years. And a decision was made, even though the filmmakers themselves and many other people wanted the footage or some of the footage to be aired on television or in films or in some other forms, it just never came out. And in fact, this was all the footage that was shot there. There wasn't any other footage. This was a complete suppression of all the footage shot in the two cities in the year after the bombing. That was basically, except with maybe little snippets, was not seen by anyone for all those years. So that's what happened. Now, why it happened, of course, is a separate question. And, of course, there's a lot of reasons, including the fact that although America felt, many people in America, or most people, felt that we had done the right thing or the necessary thing, they were at heart maybe not so sure of that. And so they did not want the people in the country or people in the world at the time when we were building more bombs and determined to build new generations of bombs and so forth, people to see what the effects of the bomb were on people. There were images of the mushroom cloud out there. There were images of the destruction of the city, aerial views, and certainly people had a sense that the cities were largely destroyed. They had a sense that the buildings were knocked down. They had a sense of the utter uniqueness of this, but they were not shown pictures of actual victims, the people who had radiation disease, people who were badly burned, and so they did not really get to see the true and unique effects of the bomb that made this weapon so different from conventional weapons.
Oh, I know a little bit about this because of my family history. My father served in the United States Army and was assigned to MacArthur's headquarters in Tokyo after World War II, and he spent 2 hours there, two years there. 2 hours wouldn't have been anything. Yeah, I'm assigned here. What time's the bus? No, he spent 2 years working for General MacArthur in those Tokyo headquarters, and during those 2 years, he got to travel around Japan, and he actually went to Hiroshima and got to see some of the devastation there. Right. Didn't take any pictures of it, but years later, when he was a high school teacher, wrote a book about Hiroshima and actually went back and interviewed some of the people who had lived through it and wrote about their first-person experiences. And I, having read that book, know what some of those horrific stories were like. Was the feeling in post-war America throughout the 40s, 50s, and even into the 60s, when some of this stuff was still being suppressed, that Americans, A, couldn't handle it, or B, might turn and think the government had done something wrong?
Well, I don't know how much of it was worried about the actual bombings in Japan and how much of it was fears that people would turn against the further development of nuclear weapons. Remember, during those years, there was dozens or hundreds, I guess, of atomic tests in America, out in the West, and all of us who grew up then were subjected to radiation that fell from the sky, and there have been estimates that tens of thousands of Americans actually were killed by the fallout that fell on America because of those bomb tests. And of course, we had the nuclear, the electric power industry. It certainly was nuclear America during those decades. And if people had gotten even more nervous about anything nuclear and about radiation and fallout and everything like that, it could have had severe consequences, good or bad, I guess you might say, in our history. So I'm not sure that it was so much aimed at making sure that people never turned against our use of the bomb in Japan, so much as the ongoing nuclear age.
We were a little bit freaked out about the nuclear age. It's hard to understand here in 2005 when all the thoughts are on terrorism.
Right.
But anybody like myself and you who grew up during the Cold War, I remember distinctly the duck and cover drills and the nuclear fallout shelters and
right.
and people actually building fallout shelters in their backyards if they had homes and could afford to do that sort of thing. And so there was great fear about that. You think that if this footage from Hiroshima and Nagasaki had gotten out, it would have exacerbated that?
Well, on the one hand, yes. On the other hand, it might have made more people pressed to have restrictions, to have, for example, the atomic tests prohibited in the atmosphere, or to have more checks on the arms race. Of course, by the 50s, the Soviets were building their own bombs, and then we developed the H-bomb. And then they developed the H-bomb and so forth. So it really was an incredible atomic race, and the genie was out of the bottle. Nevertheless, I think that if people had been more informed about the true consequences, the human effects of the bomb, they might have pressed more for more restrictions, so we didn't go so much down that path, or we ended up with a situation where nuclear proliferation it was so bad that other countries were getting the bomb, and we have the problem today. It's very difficult for America today abroad. I know it may be hard for Americans to understand this, but a lot of countries abroad, Pakistan, North Korea, and so forth, sort of feel, well, geez, America had the bomb. America even used the bomb. America is the only country that has used the bomb. Where is America getting off telling us we can't have the bomb or even use it?
And even above and beyond that is the threat to America from some of these loose nukes that are still around
right.
from the Soviet Union.
Right. Yeah. Apart from all that, there's the proliferation of the materials around the world, which makes it easy for terrorists to perhaps get the bomb. So, again, wherever you stand on the Cold War history or whatever you think about the deterrence and the nuclear weapons in our history, that's all fine. But you have to understand that there are severe consequences from that era. And, of course, it all began with Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
And Americans were not allowed to see those consequences because the film was all locked up. I assume we were able to take the Japanese footage because we were occupying Japan for
right.
a couple of years there, as I
right.
mentioned. Was all the footage taken by people who were contracted or employed by the United States government, or did they take individual footage away from people as well?
No, it was the Japanese newsreel teams, and we seized, as you may know from your family history, there was this MacArthur's office censorship. It was tightly enforced. All photos were seized. There was no such thing as people being able to distribute photos or footage on their own.
Absolutely not.
So when we took that footage, that was the end of it. So there's never been any other footage that has really surfaced beyond that which was suppressed. But, the interesting thing is, even today, if you want to put this on a different level, it's what is the responsibility of a government of any country? And I'm not talking about the USA here, but any country that goes to war and, takes certain actions and civilians die, perhaps accidentally or whatever, or even their own soldiers who are injured or died. What is the responsibility in showing their public, who obviously contributes money and manpower to such an effort, what is the responsibility of the government to show the consequences of the war that is waged in our name? And of course, we see this today with the Iraq War, where we've done separate studies here at Editor and Publisher and on our website on how photos of Iraq, of injured or or dead Americans are never shown in newspapers through sort of self-censorship. And government censorship, not allowing the photos from Iraq, and not allowing, most famously, photos of the coffins returning to Dover, Delaware, and you know, the bodies coming back from Iraq, which a lot of people are upset about. So we still have this situation today where, you could be on different sides of this issue, but you have to ask, what is the responsibility of the government and the press in showing the full consequences of what's going on? Does the American public have a really good sense of what's happening in Iraq? Do they have we lost so many soldiers today, just today, and do people have a real sense of the carnage there, or what it's like, or these poor soldiers who get legs blown off at alarming rates? Do they get a real sense of the bloodshed there? They see the death counts in the paper going up slowly, but they don't see the tens of thousands of injured and the real horrific conditions. So that's just an open question. But I think it is the larger question of what rights we have to see what the consequences of these actions.
Greg, let me take a break. We'll come back and talk some more. Greg Mitchell's an editor at Editor and Publisher. You can find this article through a link on my website, harrisonline.com, or just go to editorandpublisher.com and look for the special report called Hiroshima Cover-Up Exposed. This is the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. It's the Paul Harris Show. Happy to have you along every afternoon from 2 until 6 here on News Talk 1120 KMOX. I'm talking with Greg Mitchell, who's an editor at Editor and Publisher, which has this week published an expose of the cover-up of the devastation in Hiroshima, which sounds odd, and you think, well, why are we talking about it now? Because this weekend happens to be the 60th anniversary of the bomb dropped on Hiroshima, August 6th, 1945, and then 3 days later, Nagasaki got the same treatment, and then we celebrated VJ Day on August 15th of that day, and the Japanese finally signed the papers to surrender on September 2nd, 1945. So we're up to the 60th anniversary of all of these events in just the next few days and weeks. And what Greg has uncovered is that after World War II, we did not allow Americans to see the devastation, the horror, the carnage that took place in these two Japanese cities that we had bombed, partly because it might have inspired Americans to be more afraid of nuclear bombs, and partly because it could have created all sorts of other negative feelings. Whatever happened to the film, Greg?
Well, both the Japanese newsreel footage, which was black and white, and the American military footage, which was color, were taken to the U.S. military bases and held there in a top secret form. The Japanese footage was finally returned to Japan at the end of the 1960s and was shown on in a documentary on public television in the U.S. in a short form in 1970. The color military footage, U.S. footage, was classified for all those years, and it was ultimately released and ended up at the National Archives, where it is today in the Maryland branch. And starting in the 1980s, people found out about it and started to use it in some documentaries. So it has started to turn up in films in the last 20 years.
But it's nowhere near as pervasive as, let's say, the Zapruder film or other important moments in history that have been captured on film. Most people don't even know these films existed.
Right. Well, that was the problem. They didn't. First of all, they were classified for many years, and then no one knew they existed. They were just stuck in the archives. So when people started finding out they existed, they started to be used, and they're actually being featured in a film that I worked on that's being shown on the Sundance Channel starting this Saturday, and then much of next week. So if you're interested in getting a glimpse of this, you can try to catch that film on cable.
When the footage was brought back to the United States, do you know if President Truman or anybody in the White House looked at it?
I know they looked at photo books. It's sort of course a long story, but I met one of the men who made the U.S. footage, And I also talked with and corresponded with the director, the person who was in control of the footage for all those years. So I was pretty intimately connected with it for many, many years. And the one person who I did know very well in New York personally turned over photo books to Truman, and there's some evidence that he did look at the photos. But in the book that I wrote with Robert Lifton called Hiroshima in America a few years ago, we spend dozens of pages talking about Truman's reaction after the bombing. And, you know, it's all very interesting. It's very contradictory. Of course, famously, most people know that he never expressed any regrets, defended the use of the bomb until his death. But actually, in probing comments he made at different times, some things that people really don't know much about, meetings he had with some of the survivors, and other incidents. Actually, if you look a little below the surface, I think you might be able to see some glimmers of the fact that Truman maybe did have a few regrets or qualms about it. Once he kind of realized the human toll and sort of knew that it wasn't the best kind of situation to exterminate, target and exterminate tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people.
Well, so maybe the regret wasn't that he had done it, but that he had had to do it.
Yeah, I think that's true, but in a way that's an easy way. I mean, I think, you know, honorable people disagree about this. They've disagreed for 60 years, and some people think, the use of the bomb was unavoidable, and some people feel it was avoidable. And I think we can honestly disagree about it, and there's historical evidence on both sides. So it's not a simple question.
I'll tell you this. If I had been the President of the United States and I had ordered that, and then I found out that we had footage of what had happened afterwards, I'd want to see it, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess so. I like I said, I just don't know that there's no evidence that he, specific evidence that he saw the footage.
How much of the footage have you yourself seen?
I've seen a great deal of it. I actually have copies of it on VHS now. I've seen, it's hours of footage, and I've seen probably almost all of it by this point.
Can you describe some of what you saw? I mean, I don't want you to go into graphic detail, but try to describe at least some of what it was. Because
okay, well, I mean, part of the uniqueness of it is the graphic detail. I won't go into it, but I mean, there's really two aspects of it. These people, you know, briefly, who made the film, some of them came from the famous Hollywood studio Hollywood military studio that Ronald Reagan served with, and others, which made movies during the war. And the head of this project and others actually came out of that. So these were real filmmakers, and so they went over there and they shot this. Part of it is extraordinary color footage, which was very rare at the time, of the, almost like movie footage with tracking shots through the ruins. You know, where they put cameras on rail carts and they just kind of take you through the ruins of the city, which people. Again, people were not allowed to see this, but it's a different thing to see an aerial black and white photo, and it's quite another thing to travel through the footage, and it goes on and on and on and on. So that's one type of footage. The other type is these very graphic close-ups, you might say, of some of the survivors, although a lot of the survivors then died. But these were close-up color, you know, photos of these people posing with, radiation, the effects of radiation disease, with scars and burns, and many of them children, most of them women and children, which accurately reflected the death toll, which was overwhelmingly women and children, and sort of showing their medical injuries. And this is very graphic footage that. You know, you can understand to some extent that you wouldn't necessarily want to show people, but the fact that even in a more restrained way, people were not really shown the real effects on people is really what the suppression was all about.
You know, as you're describing this and we're talking about the graphic nature of these things, I can't help but think of two incidents from just the last couple of years of our war in Iraq. One of them was the beheading of Nick Berg a couple of years ago, and the footage of which got out onto the Internet. And I admitted on my show the morning that it became available that I did go look at it, and then I came on and I said, you know, if you want to go look at it, you can, but I'm not going to tell you where, I'm not going to link to it from my website, and I'm going to urge you not to, because I wish that I could unsee those images, which right. are now seared into my brain forever. And the other, of course, is the horrible images that we did see from Fallujah of the American contractors who were burned and hung in effigy right. and pulled apart and all that sort of stuff. And there's a limit, I think, Greg, to what Americans should be exposed to, or does that come down to personal choice and not something that the government should be deciding for us?
Right. Well, of course, the difference today, those are good examples, but the difference today is that people do have options. If they want to see footage like that, they pretty much know where to find it. I don't think there was probably a single soul in America who may have wanted to see the beheading photos or beheading videos who couldn't find it with about 14 seconds of searching.
Yep.
So that's a big difference today. If this Hiroshima footage had been, you know, if there had been an equivalent of the internet then, and they just said, well, here, it's on this government website, and if you really want to see this stuff, it's there, that would have been a little different.
It wouldn't even be on a government website. It would be on individual websites and blogs and cable news channels, would have, you know, their video camera phones would be doing
right.
that. I mean, we had the footage from the tsunami. We had the footage from the
right.
plane crash. We had the bombings in London. All that stuff, people are getting images, and it's getting out to the world almost instantaneously now.
Well,
but
that's the difference. But people, maybe younger people, may not understand how that suppression then meant suppression.
Yep.
I'm not sure there's any such thing as suppression today, but back then suppression could be complete and often was. So if you couldn't see this, you couldn't see it. And of course, the same thing went with photographs. I met the only photographer in Hiroshima who took pictures on August 6, 1945. Totally unique photos of what was going on in Hiroshima on August 6. And those photos were seized, and they first appeared in the U.S. in Life magazine in 1952. It took 7 years for anyone in America to see any photos taken in Hiroshima or Nagasaki. And when Life magazine published a handful of them in 1952, its headline was, atomic bomb no longer suppressed or something like that. So it recognized very well 7 years after the bombing that Americans had never seen any images of what actually happened in those two cities.
I have a link to Greg's article right now on my website, harrisonline.com, if you'd like to read more in-depth about this. We'll come back and talk more about it in just a moment as the Paul Harris Show continues with Greg Mitchell, from editor and publisher and co-author of the book Hiroshima in America. This is News Talk 1120 KMOX. Talking with Greg Mitchell, who has contributed to a prize-winning documentary, The Original Child Bomb, which debuts on the Sundance Cable Channel this Saturday night. He also co-authored with Robert J. Lifton the book Hiroshima in America about a decade ago. And this week on editorandpublisher.com and in their print edition has a special report about the cover-up of the images of Hiroshima taken at the site where the bombs were dropped in August of 1945, 60 years ago, in both Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and how the government seized the footage and locked it away for decades before any Americans were ever allowed to see it. We talked earlier about parallels in Iraq and the notion of suppression, but we also talked about how images have a way of getting out there, regardless of how ugly they may be. So can the case be made that there is suppression going on now, other than the footage of the corpses coming home to Dover, Greg?
Well, as many of the readers of your listeners know, since the beginning of, or even before the Iraq War, we had this new embedded system for reporters and photographers who, if they wanted to travel with the troops, had to sign an agreement that their work would be subject to censorship, and they had to abide by certain rules in terms of what they could show and when they could transmit it and so forth. So essentially, since the war itself began, there has been a system of at least potential censorship or certainly a lot of self-censorship. So anyone who's wanted to really get really close to the action has had to undergo these kind of restrictions.
But that information is really more operational than devastational.
Well, yeah, I mean, in theory, they're just trying to make sure the reporters, unlike Geraldo Rivera, don't give away positions and plans and things like that.
Right.
In execution, however, it also means that they don't get either don't get close enough to the action to really take those kind of photographs, or what often happens is they may get a photograph that's quite gripping, and then they're asked to delay sending it because of an operational reason, or they're told to delay sending it because people have to be contacted, the reports have to be made, or victims' families have to be notified.
But aren't a lot
and
of
then
them...
then they lose their news value. So then the photos never get shown, and then they have editors back home who may not want to run them. They think they're too gripping. But these photos are shown all the time in Europe.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. I think a lot of the suppression—I don't want to call it censorship, but the suppression of a lot of the pictures from this war is being done at the managing editors' desks of newsrooms across the country.
Yeah, well, that's true. Like I said, it's a combination of things. It's a combination of the of self censorship, of potential official censorship, and then just the tastes or fears of editors back home. But I think it's revealing that I guess it's FX TV show on Iraq, the
over there
dramatic series that opened last week, and I guess it's on again tonight.
Yes,
got a tremendous amount of press and some praise for being graphic, or really giving it a chance for people to see what it's like, or somewhat what it's like over there. And yeah, it's kind of sad that you have to point to a TV show. You know, 2 years after the war started, to kind of help the people understand what's going on over there.
Greg Mitchell's article is available at editorandpublisher.com. There is, of course, a link on my website, harrisonline.com. He's also contributed to this movie, The Original Child Bomb, which debuts Saturday night on the Sundance Channel. Greg, thanks for your time today.
Well, I really enjoyed it, and it's good to hear about your father, too.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Greg Mitchell here on the Paul Harris Show. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX.